Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
I know when I'm being watched, Sam.
Your paranoia is really cramping my style, Malcolm.
Come on, just because you can't see bugs don't mean they ain't in the house, Sam.
Up on this dirty-ass roof.
Why don't you be like Bing Crosby about that shit, man, and accentuate the motherfucking positive. Look at this view.
I bet they're doing them for me. It's nice, ain't it, Malcolm?
Yeah, it's most definitely soothing, Cass. The air up here is cooler.
Far away from the prying eyes of your G-men.
Yeah, you joke all you want, Sam. I'm telling you, it's got worse since the tension between me and Mr. Muhammad. Well, I met with a writer in New York a few weeks back. There were two guys following us through the airport. I swear it was the same two.
I thought you didn't trust writers.
Oh. This one was a brother, and well, this meeting was important. I figure I better start getting my life story documented in my own words while I can.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
It is late February, and we are doing a new episode every single week. And since it's February, we're choosing films by about, I'm trying to think of everything. No, I was going to say that they were nonfiction or you know, about actual historical people, but they haven't all been because the first one we did was The Princess and the Frog.
Right.
But our last one was Tina Turner. And this one is jam-packed with great Americans. This was an amazing story. I had not read this before. And because we're doing a new episode every single week, we're kind of branching out or at least broadening our definition of book. In this case, we are looking at a play that was adapted into a movie. But before we get to today's quote unquote book and movie, there are a few other places where you could interact with us and other listeners of Book Versus Movie on the internet.
Yes, because we're always looking for suggestions. We love hearing your suggestions and your ideas for, because we talk about books and plays and song titles. We've done magazine articles to movies. We're really up for the adaptation. And you could find us, we have a very basic Facebook page. If you just want to like the page, ask questions there, that's fine. But we do have a Facebook group that's private, and it's just for people that are into the podcast and into books and movies, and we have fun discussions there, and it's just like a nice place to drop off your ideas if you're into Facebook. So you do have to ask, and it's just called Book vs Movie Podcast Group. Ask to join, come on in and have some fun. You can also send us suggestions via Twitter. We're on Twitter at Book Versus a Movie. You spell that all out. We're on Instagram at Book Versus Movie, and if you guys are on Instagram, please follow us. We're trying to get those numbers up. And if you leave us a 5-star review in iTunes, we'll mention you on the air. But also another great place, if you don't know what to write when you get there, just leave us some ideas for books and movies you'd like for us to cover in the future. And finally, we do have a basic email. It's Book Versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. We also have a new logo with stickers available. So if you would like some stickers, send us an email with your address and we will drop them off in the mail for you.
Now, because this is a play, it is not available. I don't believe it's available on Audible. Sometimes plays are, but I don't believe this one is. Also, I think because it's so new.
Mm-hmm. But we do have an Audible promotion.
We do.
And it's, and something in the future probably very well will be there because we have some really fun stuff coming up. So if you want to check out Audible and get a free month, go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie and try it out for yourself.
Is there anything we've forgotten?
Patreon. We do have a Patreon page if you're looking to support the show. We have a couple of affordable options. We are putting all the episodes 2018 and previous to that goes now behind that Patreon wall. We just put Catch Me If You Can there. We have great movies and great shows there. So it's at there's about 70 episodes. A handful are free. So you could just go to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, look for Book VS Movie Podcast and listen to those. And if you want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. If money's tight, we totally understand that. You know, just tell a friend about the show, you know, or just say hi on social media or just share a post or whatever. You know, we love meeting new people and finding new listeners.
Yes, we do. Now, today we are going to be talking about One Night in Miami, which I had never heard of until you told me about it last week.
Right.
I remember reading about the historical events that this play and movie deal with, but I was not aware of the play or the film. I'm very excited to talk about them. But let's talk first perhaps about our playwright.
Yes, his name is Kemp Powers. It's a family name. I think he's like the third or the fourth in his family. He's originally from Brooklyn. He was a journalist for many years and then got into screenwriting and playwriting. In the last year, he had a movie he co-directed and co-wrote called Soul, which is on Disney Plus. Did you see Soul?
I have not seen it yet. Everybody in my family has seen it but me, and they love that movie. I just have not had a chance to see it yet. I hear it's phenomenal.
I've seen it 5 times, and I cry every single time.
Have you?
Yes. It's the first Pixar movie that has an African-American character as the center of the story. He helped co-write that. He helped progress the script along. He also wrote this play called One Night in Miami, which is based on a true story. It's about Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke meeting together in Miami, February 25th, I believe, 1964. This is after JFK is killed. This is right after the Beatles come to America. I mean, everything is changing. And the civil rights movement is just getting started. And it's a very exciting premise because the men didn't record what they were doing there. And later on, they told people about what they talked about. And apparently Jim Brown was upset because they weren't going to bring over any chicks or anything like that. It was like a serious discussion about politics. Kemp Powers is the person who came up with this and wrote a play for it. And I was saying to Margo, did you know his backstory? And you said, no. I'm like, okay. When he was 14 years old and living in Brooklyn, he was being raised by, I believe it was his mom. He was living with his mom. And one day he invited a couple of friends over to check out the gun that the mom kept in the armoire for protection. And he accidentally shot one of his friends and killed him.
Oh, my goodness. Whoa.
Yeah. 14.
Oh, how sad.
Tremendously sad. Tremendously sad. And he wrote about this, by the way, in a memoir and assaults. And it's also in a New York Times story. I'll put it into the Facebook group so you guys can read for yourselves. But anyway, so he's 14. The boy's parents are completely, you know, engulfed with grief, but they know it's an accident. They don't want him because he's a black kid to go into the system. So they just say to the judge that have mercy on him. He's a kid. He didn't know what he was doing. And the judge says he has to go into therapy for a year, very hardcore, intense therapy. And so he does. And he goes to high school in Virginia. He goes to Howard University and he decided that the kid's name was Henry, that he was going to live his life as successfully as possible for Henry, because Henry wouldn't get to do anything. So he's had this he worked at Newsweek. He worked at all these different places. And then one day he was working, and I know this happened to a few of my friends. He worked for Yahoo. Yahoo was like hiring like crazy, a few years ago when they got a new CEO. And then he got laid off unceremoniously. He winds up working for AOL, doing the same job with no health benefits. He gets very sick. And as he's sick and trying to recover, his sibling dies, his sister. So he has gone through major life change. Like, once you know this, you're going to want to watch Soul and you're going to cry your eyes out because you're just, because there's so much there about what it means to be alive and what it means, you know, to get the most out of life. And what is success, by the way? What does that mean? And so that's our author today, Kemp Powers. And this is, he wrote this play because he just heard that these four men, he thought these are like four of the most, you talk about the most interesting people of the 20th century. I mean, these four people just spent a night talking about politics just before Muhammad Ali is going to announce that he's giving up his name of Cassius Clay. And just about, you know, it's a year before, I mean, spoiler, Sam Cooke is killed a year later. Malcolm X is killed a year later. Muhammad Ali becomes the most beloved people ever of the 20th century. And Jim Brown is still around. And it's, so this is our story that we have today.
I had, like I said, I'd never heard of this play, but I knew a little bit about these events. I really like, so the play, just so you know, and he did also, as Margot, I think, mentioned, he also wrote the screenplay for the film, but the play is a one act.
Mm-hmm.
And it all takes place in one room. So there's no, there's never any like change of scenery. It all occurs within this hotel room at the Hampton Inn. Is that what it's called? In Miami. And so, and there are only the main characters, the men are the only, it's an all male cast in the play. So it's meant to be performed. I was trying to find if there were any video of the play.
Me too.
I couldn't find any. Could you?
No. I'm sure they bought it all out.
I would love to see it. I'm sure. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
I get it. So it's very different from the movie in that there are no women. It only takes place in this one room. It's very interesting how you get all these different character dynamics. There's a lot of stuff happening in this one act play that when you would see it in the theater would go all the way through without an intermission. So as Margot mentioned, I was just trying to bring up the cast. So we're in 2013. Yes, we've got Cassius Clay, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, and it's the night after, or it is the night of Cassius Clay, of who would later, of course, become Muhammad Ali. It's the night that he wins the heavyweight championship?
Yeah, it was a heavyweight championship.
The heavyweight championship against Sonny Liston. So a very big night. And instead of going out and like tearing down the town, they're in this kind of shabby hotel room. It doesn't even have a television in it. Sam Cooke is the first character who walks into the scene in the play. So you're looking at an empty hotel room. Sam Cooke is escorted into the room by these two young men. In the play, they're both, the two kind of quote-unquote guards outside the hotel room are both, they're kind of like kids, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Aren't they sort of like teenagers? Yeah, which is a little different from the movie also. And so Sam Cooke comes in first. He's got a guitar. And the guards like pat him down and he's like, are you kidding me? These are my friends. And while he's waiting for his friends to show up, he's kind of strumming the guitar and he's making up this song as he's waiting called Put Me Down Easy. Is that what it's mm-hmm. called? And then I forget who comes in next. I think all the rest of the guys come in at once because they've all come together from the fight. So you have Malcolm X and you have Cassius Clay and you have Jim Brown, two, what I imagine, I not seeing anything in the play, but, you know, two enormous, I just mean just like stature, very strong mm-hmm. elite athletes. And Malcolm X, who was, you know, kind of smaller frame, you know, somewhat slight compared to them, I think it's kind of an interesting idea, but they all did really know each other. They all were really friends. And so there's a lot of that, of them kind of, and they're all at these kind of critical points in their lives and careers and in the United States, you know, right in the middle of the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And they're catching up with each other and trying to figure out where they fit, not only, you know, does this change their dynamic amongst each other? Does it change, you know, their relationship with the public, you know, how are they processing all of this stuff that's going on? I really liked it.
Yeah, I did too. And I think it was one of the interviews on Variety had an interview with our director, Regina King, who's amazing. And she, and she said there was, think about it. He put all of that in there, all of that personality, all that goes on with all these four men, their ideas, their intellect, everything that they cared about. And she did, and he did under 100 pages. That is pretty cool. I mean, he writes economically, but I think the play format really works for him. But also, I just started reading his memoir, and he's a fantastic writer.
I agree. I think the writing is really good. A one-act play is a difficult kind of a piece of writing. It's an easy thing to kind of mess up, but I think he does a great job, you know, considering that the whole thing is in this one room. He does a great job of keeping the action going. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like four guys just sitting in a room talking. It feels like there's a lot of action going on. And really the only action that happens is that I think Malcolm in the play, I think Malcolm X leaves the room twice. Once to get his camera mm-hmm. and once to get a record. He like leaves in the play. He runs down the street to a record store to buy a record and comes back. And the record is Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind, which he plays to kind of confront Sam Cooke because he feels that Sam Cooke is not doing enough with his platform, what we would say today.
Yeah.
I found the whole thing just very, very interesting. We know that they spent that night together. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm a little unclear about how much is actually true and how much of it is. I mean, anything that they said in the hotel room obviously is going to be speculative.
Exactly.
But I buy it. I think if I were any of those men, that's what I would probably be concerned with. On a night like that, it's very interesting.
It is.
Just the whole idea of the play, it is fascinating. I learned a lot.
Yeah, I did too. And so Sam Cooke was, they're all so interesting and they're all just mm-hmm. like the best at what they do and who they are. And they're so dynamic and interesting. And the fact that they'd all get together and they realize like there is this big problem. And so, I mean, I'm not an expert on Malcolm X. I'm not an expert on Islam. So I'm going to try to, from what I understand, He was a spokesperson for about 15 years. He was passionate. He brought people in. Malcolm X was very, very charismatic. And he wanted to leave and do his own thing. And he wanted Muhammad Ali to join him. And it's because Malcolm X had some issues with the person in charge, Muhammad, that the man was having affairs with women on staff and other things. And Ali said no, that he would stick with the big organization. That's what he felt more comfortable doing. And he said that was his biggest regret in his life, that he had, because their friendship fell apart after that. Like right after this happens, they all kind of change. Jim Brown goes to L.A. He becomes an actor, but he's also an activist. Malcolm X is then, there's tension with him, with the former Muslim community that he was with, and the FBI, and with your basic racists that are, you know, upset about civil rights. So he's constant, and his family, they must live in terror this whole time. I mean, I just, when you think about all that, what they've been through, and there's, we'll talk about the movie, but they, you know, there's a scene where his home is firebombed. His kids are in there. It's the terror that they must have lived with. And it's Sam Cooke would write A Change Is Going to Come. And that's his big ode to the future. And it predates, you know, Marvin Gaye and what he writes about. Unfortunately, Sam Cooke a year later is killed under very weird circumstances, which is a whole other show. Muhammad Ali, like I said, he versus Cassius X, and then he becomes Muhammad Ali and becomes a hardcore Muslim, and he wins over white people like nobody's business. Like, he is one of the most famous people of the 20th century.
He's just, he is an American superhero. Yeah. I mean, he just is such a story. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not, obviously, like I said, I don't know a thing about boxing, you know, when, especially like for our generation growing, I mean, he was such a mythical,
yeah,
larger than life figure. There's this famous story about there was a man who was about to jump off the ledge of a building.
Yeah.
And Muhammad Ali just happened to be there, and he talks this guy off of the ledge. He just was a really fascinating, I mean, again, an elite athlete, but an extraordinary mind, really.
Did you ever see When We Were Kings? It's about,
yes.
Oh my God, it's one of the best documentaries ever. And it'll really help your appreciation for boxing and the skill that's involved with it. But he's so handsome. I mean, I love this actor who plays him, Gorey, or Eli Gorey, sorry,
yeah.
Eli Gorey.
It's a good job.
He
yeah.
does the, gets the voice down, the patois, and he's fighting somebody listed and goes, oh my God, you're so ugly. Like, all that. I mean, just,
yeah.
he's hilarious, but he's very strong. And he knows that people want to kind of attach themselves to him because he's going to mm-hmm. become a superstar, and that's going to mean something. And what's the most amount of good he can do? And that's,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I just thought, and again, I wish I could see some of the play. I would love to have seen something of the stage. Yeah, yeah, because, you know, again, there's a lot of difference between the play and the movie, even though the writer is the same writer, which I think you can totally tell, because all of this, I love that there's a lot of depth that's added to the movie without that. There's nothing, I didn't feel like there was anything like tacked on or extra, even though we have a lot, many more locations. Mm-hmm. We have more, many more characters. I love the way that the transition from the play to the movie happened.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm trying to think, is there anything else that we want to mention about the play?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. It's, again, it's just a one act play. It's a very quick read.
Mm-hmm. It's on Kindle. You can get it on your Kindle.
Yeah. And I totally get why somebody, let alone Regina King, would want to turn it into a movie.
So, Margo, should I play the trailer now?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on.
Back here for the Champs Victory Party. Don't be late.
Minister Malcolm X.
Good news. The chariot is coming.
You know I'm the greatest. That's right.
Jim Brown takes the ball.
Your record is going to stand the test of time.
How's everybody feeling tonight?
Together, yeah.
New heavyweight champion of the world.
Say, champ, you don't suppose you could sign an autograph?
Yeah, of course, man. Give him an autograph, Jim.
Actually, Mr. Cook.
Oh, sure thing, brother.
Oh, yeah, don't you think it's about time to party?
Tonight is a chance for us to reflect.
Hey. You mean no one else is coming?
Well, this is off to a hopping start.
You all are a bright and shining future.
You need to understand what is at stake here.
Everything's not so black and white like you make it out to be.
But we are fighting for our lives.
You know I know what's going on out there, right?
Listen, listen. Brothers and sisters, listen, listen, listen.
Miami, the champs!
Swear we'll never find a way to where we're going all alone.
The goal is for us to really be free.
We want the world, but we're safe to be ourselves.
Think like we want,
without having to answer to anybody forward. We have to be there for each other.
Who's the greatest?
You brothers could move mountains without lifting a finger.
This is the feature film debut for Regina King, whom I've been a fan of since Room 227.
Oh, remember?
Yes.
Oh. Well, her directorial debut, we should say.
Yes, feature film.
Because we all know who Regina King is, but I was very impressed with the directing of this project, especially having just, you know, reading the play and then immediately going to the movie. I super enjoyed it. I thought the cast is spectacular. But before we get to that, I mean, yeah, let's talk about Regina King. I mean, she's such an impressive person.
I know. She's been in show business since she was a kid. She's always worked. She was in Jerry Maguire. She was in Watchmen, which was this HBO series that I loved, that normally I'm not into, but I loved it. She won an Oscar the year before for If Beale Street Could Talk. I didn't see that movie, but she won the Best Supporting Actor. And the playwright and the was worried. He said, well, Kent Power said, like, she was really interested and she was filming all this other stuff, but he goes, I thought she would get distracted. But no, this was her feature film debut. She loved the story, but she expands upon it. So we do have Betty Shabazz. We have Barbara Cook. We have, you know, we have the Muhammad Ali's trainers, like Angelo, Michael Imperioli.
I know, Christopher.
He's in this movie. And then does it begin with Jim Brown at the house?
How does it open? It opens. No. It opens interestingly. So again, the play takes place all in the same night, all in the same room. It is the night that Cassius Clay, soon to be Muhammad Ali, wins the heavyweight championship against Sonny Liston. But the movie opens with Muhammad Ali not exactly winning this other fight.
Right.
He's in a fight. And I forget, so again, I don't understand. I'm sorry. I don't understand the nuances of how boxing is scored or anything like that. But he's not doing very well in the fight. I think it is nevertheless called for him. It's still a victory. And from that, he goes on to fight. So he's preparing to fight Sonny Liston then for the championship. So it opens with this other fight where he's not doing that great, Cassius Clay. And now he's coming to Miami to prepare for the championship against Liston. So his trainers are there trying to encourage him to just, you know, stick to training because the other fight like didn't go that great. And he's like, no, I have to go see my friend Malcolm. And he goes and sees Malcolm X at the hotel where Malcolm is staying, which in the play, that's where everything happens, is in that hotel room. And they pray together, which this is not in the play at all. He prays with Malcolm before the fight. And then it's a legendary fight. He goes and he wins. And Malcolm is in the crowd. Jim Brown is announcing the fight.
Yeah.
He did a lot of sports casting. So he's there announcing the fight. And Sam Cooke is also in the crowd that night.
Liston's got Clay against the ropes.
Get off the ropes, guys. Get off the ropes.
Watch him, ref. There you go. Stay on him.
Damn, Sonny. You can nuzzle him?
Take
that with you.
Come on, Jay. There we go. You see? See, he's a smart player.
Stay on it. Slide. Keep surrounding that jab, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just keep staying with the plant.
Walking.
Looking good. He's right where you want him. All right? Mm-hmm. Finish him off. Take that belt home. Okay?
Just stay on it. You're looking bad over there. You're looking bad. You got it.
I told you he's ugly. You should see him up closer. Oh, man, he's ugly.
Let's go. Let's go home.
Quit, Sonny. You ready to quit. Go on, quit. That's it, man. Quit. Go on, quit. That's it, boy. That's it, Sonny. That's it. Go on, quit this. Go on, quit this.
You the champ.
Everybody, you the champ.
I was trying to remember. So, but I was going to say before that we saw one of the other two guys, right?
Well, we see
at least, or maybe even both.
We see Sam Cooke, and so Sam Cooke is doing a performance, and it's an all-white audience. And
oh, that's right.
And they're
the
cold fish, yes. And they're a bunch of cold fish. And he kind of he's a little dispirited. I mean, he has all these hits behind him. I people just make me crazy sometimes. I don't understand. And then it's Jim Brown. Jim Brown is going to he's in the South and he's visiting old family members or like an old coach.
Oh, that's right,
Mr. Carlton. And yes. And there it's Bo Bridges of all people, like one of the most likable people on film. And he
not in this movie.
No, in this movie he greets him very warmly, but it's on this like southern house where they have a wraparound porch that's sort of screened in. And they're talking on the porch and they're having lemonade and they're having this nice conversation. And then the man's daughter says, hey, you got to help me move some furniture, remember? And he looks elderly. And Jim says, you know what? I could do that for you. Don't worry about it. And the man says, oh, no, we don't have any N-words in the house. You know how that is.
Like
it's not.
You understand.
It's very shocking.
Yeah.
And then,
so in the play, I was going to say though, in the play, he tells that story while he's in the hotel room.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. No. And Sam Cooke tells a version of the story of going and playing for the white audience and kind of bombing. But I really liked seeing the scenes. I really enjoyed that very much. I it was very powerful, very well written.
And well cast. And we should talk about the cast really quick before I forget. So it's Kingsley Ben Adler for Malcolm X, Eli Gorey, Cassius Clay, Aldous Hodge is Jim Brown, Leslie Odom Jr. is Sam Cooke. Oh my God.
Come on.
Can it get better cast? He played Aaron Burr in Hamilton, which is another thing on Disney Plus I've seen like 100 times. We also have, like I said, Bo Bridges, Michael Imperioli, the women. There's Lance Reddick as Kareem X. He's one of the people that's sort of protecting Malcolm, or is he protecting him or not protecting him? Betty Shabazz is played by Joaquina Calacuongo. I'm sorry if I messed up your name. And Nicolette Robinson as Barbara Cooke. And these are the main people that are in the movie. I love everything about, like, New York City in the 50s is interesting to me. Miami in the 60s is super interesting to me. Just the colors and the cars and all of it. Just like that whole lifestyle is just so interesting to me.
And even though it's so, I agree. So, but I love that they, I mean, yes, you have this scene with Bo Bridges, which is just like, puts it all out there. Like, this is how we do things here in Florida. I really liked all of the more subtle ways that they are showing us about segregation and the inequities. And I thought, you know, the art direction is really superb. You see Sam Cooke's room at the Fontainebleau, which is the fanciest of the fanciest of Miami in the 60s, versus Malcolm X's room at the Hampton, which, you know, you see Sam Cooke comes in and he like feels the polyester coverlet, you know, and the whole thing I think is really, really super well done. The wardrobe.
Oh my gosh.
And the hair. I mean, just, it's great. I really loved it. I really loved all of the you know, Malcolm X's house. You know, and his little girls, like when he's talking to his little girl on the phone. And the whole thing, I think, is done really, really, really well. And it's well written and it's well directed. And the cast is amazing. And you have the Sam Cooke songs, like the Sam Cooke music is so good.
The
beautiful
scene where he's playing a show and Jackie Wilson opens for him. And Jackie Wilson was kind of a creep and would like turn the power off like for the act following him. People get competitive in show business, let me just say. And so Sam Cooke just starts singing chain gang, and he just kind of encourages the audience to be the percussion, and to and they're doing it's incredible. But he had such a beautiful voice, and he was so good looking, like such a beautiful man.
Yes, he really was. Oof. Yeah, and what a voice.
Yeah.
Microphone is on. I know. How's that for some bad luck?
Bad luck, my ass. Jackie was always the king of sabotage.
Regardless, Sam was now stuck on stage with no sound and a worked up Boston crowd. Well, things escalated quickly.
My band was out there like some runaway slaves.
Boy, musicians and not bodyguards, baby. Good luck.
And Sam, he just stood there on that stage.
I'm thinking to myself, this young brother was fitting to get himself killed.
What then what happened? Something amazing happened.
Hey, Tommy! Are y'all
in the chain gang? All right, let's go. All right, let's go. Singing to him, but you know, in the background was you couldn't hear anything except that chant. You know what? That was good enough. Yes, that was one hell of a show, Sam.
That sounds like something.
It really was, Cash. It really was.
And I liked in the play, I really enjoyed that part of the play. In the play, I think Malcolm is telling that story.
Yes.
He's recounting that story. He's trying to show Sam that he sees him and that he sees what a powerful voice, you know, not just the technical voice, but his spiritual voice that he has. And it's a very powerful part of the play. But, you know, sometimes, like when we were talking last week about What's Love Got to Do with It, there were some parts of the book where Tina's recounting this show or that show, and it's a, you know, and it'll be a really powerful passage in the book. But somehow in the dramatization, it just didn't, you know, it didn't quite live up to her telling it in the book. Mm-hmm. I felt in this version, however, that when we went from the play telling of that event where the sound it goes out versus the dramatization, I thought the dramatization like really delivered it in such a powerful way. I keep saying powerful, but it really is a very powerful experience. This film is great.
It really
I
is.
Loved that scene.
And I love that the idea of Malcolm X playing Blown in the Wind for these three men and saying like, this is what we need to be doing. How is this, you know, Jewish kid from Minnesota doing this and you're not doing this? And I'm not being totally fair to Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke is like making, has his own record label. I mean, he has people he's responsible for. Yeah.
Absolutely. He was blazing all kinds of trails. He was doing a lot, but he was doing it sort of behind the scenes. He wasn't you know, he was moving and he was moving things in the industry and really moving the needle in a very significant way, but not in a front page news kind of a way.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the,
yeah, it's not fair.
It's not fair. But you know,
yeah.
But it did make him want to eventually write A Change Is Going to Come. And it's very sad to say that this is something that he wrote and then he didn't really get to feel the success of that because he died. He was murdered.
Oh, he died. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I, this morning I was listening to, there are so many recordings of that song. So many recordings of that song. It's a very powerful song. And I found this amazing version. And I need to see when she recorded it, but it was by Aretha Franklin.
Oh boy.
And she sings, before she sings the song, I'm like getting choked up about it. Before she sings the song, she has this little intro that she sings about how this was a song about her friend and, you know, she wants to sing it. And she, I mean, it's so moving. And she sings it, of course, you know,
Majesty.
Freaking kills it.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful song. But I love, and in the play, he sings the song in the hotel room to his friends. In the movie, he sings it on television, which I think is really powerful too. I think that I loved that choice of having him singing it on TV and everybody's seeing it on TV and he's really, he's like changing the culture in real time. I liked the choice to have an older, like a grown guard, if you will, outside the door, and the younger guy. In the play, they're both young men, but one's very serious and the other one's not quite as serious. But I liked having the difference in age. I think was a good choice for the movie, and I really, really love the scene where they go up to the roof, which is not in the play at all. I thought that was such a gorgeous choice. Loved it.
It's what I want to see when I'm in Miami. Like, that's exactly what I want to look at. Like, that's the view I want to see. And just the thought of these men enjoying that. We also should mention, you know, this is a part of the time where, you know, not every, there's segregation. A black person couldn't stay in any hotel that they just wanted to. So, and it's, and to think about, these are like four very powerful individuals who would all become superstars or be gone in a couple of years, but they're still talked about to this day. It's incredible.
It's really fascinating. And you do, I mean, there are these moments in time where you have these like weird little snapshots or, and you do, you wonder like, what did they talk about that night? Like what must they have said? Because right after that, Cassius Clay says, "Don't ever call me Cassius Clay again. You know, I'm Muhammad Ali." Yeah, it's
and it was a big deal.
That happens. It was a huge deal.
My dad and I talked about it. Yeah, he told me about it. Yeah.
And I mean, you and I coming up, he was already Muhammad Ali. And so like we were like, "Well, why would you ever not call him? That's his name. Yeah. Why wouldn't you call him that? Like, why do you care? Let him, if that's what he wants to be called." But we didn't understand all of, you know, basically what's going on in this movie, all of that was behind it, and the violence and the just everything that went behind that was behind that choice or leading up to that choice. It's very, very interesting. I wish I knew more about all of these men and their respective fields. You know, like I really feel like I don't have enough appreciation for what each of them did in their respective field. I wish, you know, if I had time, I would have learned a lot more, but I just blown away by this. I thought it was really great. And I thought it was also at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of exposition happening, but at the same time, you do get a real sense of these are four friends. These are four men who have history, really love each other.
And they changed the world on top of it.
They really did.
They did.
They really did. Yeah, it's cool. I really liked it. I thought the directing was spot on. Loved the cast. Loved all the choices for all of the non-hotel room scenes. We have a lot of other locations, like we mentioned before, like you see Sam Cooke in the Fountain Blue and all of that. But you also have, like, they go and buy liquor at a liquor store and they run into some kids who are in awe. It's, you know, here it's Cassius Clay. He just won the championship and he's at my liquor store. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just terrific. I really liked it. I liked seeing the trainers. I liked seeing the families. Like I said, I really loved that scene with Malcolm X speaking on the phone with his wife and his little girl, and seeing, like, when he's in the play, he's always kind of nervously looking out the window, and he says that he sees these men following him. But I thought that the way that they had the actual men in the movie was very ominous and, mm-hmm. And handled very, I mean, they just really give you the heebie-jeebies. I was going to say goosebumps. Yeah, just like, oh.
Well, he was being followed by everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, and you know, journalists wrote, like, anything he said, journalists would, you know, they would take a quote of his. He had said something about the chickens coming home to roost. This is after Kennedy was assassinated.
Yes.
Which is not the greatest quote. Some of his stuff was taken out of context. He was just, was incendiary, and he pushed buttons, and he wasn't just going to say the yes, ma'am, no, ma'am kind of thing. He was going to speak his mind. I think maybe a part of him knew he wouldn't live a long life because of that. He knew he was putting himself out there. This is a man who also, like, loved his wife and loved his kids. And that's a hard thing to, yeah, you know, to go behind a cause that could get you killed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't imagine, like, being in your home at night, how vulnerable you must feel. And then it did happen that they were firebombed, and then, and he was at a speaking engagement when he was killed. That's, you know, I know.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Again, I wish I knew more about it, but from the little bit that I saw and read, yeah, he just was kind of trying to find his own way, which, I mean, doesn't he have a right to try to find his own way and his own beliefs? And for that, he was so targeted by literally, like, on all sides, you know, by the people who had, you know, who he had allied himself with, and the people who he had allied himself against, and it's so sad. And obviously, you know, he had a genuine, these four men had a relationship mm-hmm. with each other. And so, it's really terribly sad, especially for that, you know, because it isn't much longer after that that Sam Cooke and Malcolm X are, and that whole story about Sam Cooke is so,
it's bizarre.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. We still don't know everything that happened. It's but it was another case of a black man being seen threatening. That's a whole other story. You guys can look that up yourselves. Jim Brown's still with us, though.
Yeah, he sure is.
Kicking it, you know. And Muhammad Ali,
he looks great.
He looks amazing. And Muhammad Ali lived a lot longer than people thought he would. And he never hid his illness. He didn't hide that he was deteriorating.
You know.
And that's amazing.
It's true. It really is. I think that, to the very end, mm-hmm. he kind of understood. He had to seem to have this understanding. And he was known for being, what's the word? You know, all the kind of braggadocious things that he would say before the fight. But really, in terms of living his life, he did so very humbly and seemed to understand that people looked up to him
mm-hmm.
and that he had a leadership role. And I don't, you know, he somehow didn't ever seem to take advantage of that or not live up to it. And here he had this very difficult illness, and again, who would have blamed him for wanting to keep that private?
Absolutely
no one.
He
had every right to do that, and yet I'm sure, you know, he must have felt that he could, there was, you know, it was his sort of calling to lead now in this other way.
About,
just,
you know, ableism,
really something.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this movie, it premiered in movie theater. We're not going to movie theaters. Some people are. But it did premiere in movie theaters so that it could then go. It's now on Amazon Prime. It's streaming. And I was looking this up. The Oscars, the Academy Awards are in April this year. I think this is going to get a bunch of nominations.
I hope it does. It's so good. Yeah. It's so well written and well performed and well directed and everything, all the art direction and the music. And I really, really think it's, I mean, I really want to watch it again.
I liked it more
really
the second time.
I really enjoyed it very much.
And also what I liked about it is I learned something, but I never felt like I was being lectured. You know?
Yes. Thank you. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all amazing. I'm really glad we did this.
Me too. So book or movie though.
Yes. I'm going to pick the movie.
I am too. You know, again, we have the same writer.
Yep.
For both. And I really love what he did with his own source material. I think he developed it in the absolute best possible way, in a really enjoyable way. And I enjoyed the play very much. And as someone who really liked the play, I extra enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
If you have seen this movie and you really like it, I do encourage you to read the play just because I think it's just interesting to see all of that story condensed in that way is very interesting to me just in terms of the writing. But I agree. I mean, the movie is really cool.
It is.
I really liked it.
It's really amazing.
It's so good. So what are we doing next?
Well, we talked about it. And for March, we were talking about musicals in March. We had a few ideas.
Good suggestions.
Yeah, we got some good suggestions. My Fair Lady, based on Pygmalion. Cabaret, is based on I Am a Camera. This is a play, John Van Druten. Yeah, I got, they're pretty easy to get. I got mine in a couple of days. And there was also Chicago, which is based on a play, and there's a great, both Cabaret and Chicago. So there was this great series on FX. You and I talked about it. It was Feud. It was Betty and Joan. They did one with Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. And
yes.
Oh my God.
It was really good.
Oh, it was so good. I think I'm obsessed with these musicals after that. We also had Gypsy. That was one that somebody suggested, which is one of my favorites. And then we just had somebody
else. Mine too. And I've read that book. It's very good. I don't know how easy that book is to get. Well, yeah, we'll have to look into that. I read it years ago. It was in my neighborhood library. And for some reason, we had that book and we also had her sister's book.
Oh, you mentioned that in the Facebook group.
It's a really good book. It's called Wreaking Havoc. I think it was a 2-volume one. I only read the first one, Wreaking Havoc, which was fascinating to hear her point of view of that same time. You know, it's really, really interesting. But Gypsy's book is excellent. I really recommend it if you can get your hands on it. But we'll look into how available that is.
Yeah.
Were there any others?
There was Les Miserables. There was Cats.
Oh, that book is a zillion pages.
I know. There's no way we can get through that.
I read it in high school. It's
The King
so
and I.
Long.
That was another one. The King and I.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Pygmalion is available on Kindle. And pretty easy to get. It's George Bernard Shaw, and it's not very long.
Right.
And the movie's, excuse me, the movie's easy to get,
too. Yeah, let's do that one. We can talk about Rex Harrison again.
And Audrey
Hepburn. That's always fun. Yeah.
And the costumes.
And Cecil Beat. Oh, yeah.
And it's my mother's favorite musical. It was I grew up with this. Awesome. So My Fair Lady, Pygmalion. Yay!
Yes.
And then we'll look into Gypsy and the King and I and stuff.
Yeah.
But send us your ideas. Send us your suggestions, you guys. Because we're still home.
Yes, we are. Coming up on a year.
Yep. Oh, so Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama, and where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fitchick for Twitter and Instagram. My blog is brooklynfitchick.com, and we will be back soon with a brand new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book versus Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective, and we follow the hashtags Podern Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book versus a Movie. You just spelled it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book vs Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book vs Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who were nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Off the road, can you hear the bells ring out? Speak now, speak now. Can you hear the angels sing low? Speak now.